Greetings of Christian love and a hearty welcome to everyone gathered here today. Trust that the Spirit of God will continue to lead us in worship as we look into the Word for a message from Him this morning. A lot of thoughts go through my mind as a person tries to get a word from the Lord for a sermon like this, but sometimes it's a bit hard to determine what the will of the Lord is, and certain, at least it is for me certain times. But this morning we would like to look at John chapter 11, continuing our sequence in the book of John. John chapter 11, and today we want to look at a story that is well known. I realize most of you probably have read this story and know, at least if nothing else, you know that one of the shortest verses in the Bible, and that being Jesus wept, that's in this chapter. There's also other things that we refer to from time to time and in our experience that takes us to this chapter. I'm not planning to read the whole chapter this morning, but I will plan to read the majority of it. The whole idea and the whole story here, there's a couple things that to me are very interesting. And I was blessed again in studying this. So we want to, without further comment, read John chapter 11 and verse 1 and continue here for a period of time. It says, "Now a certain man was sick, named Lazarus, of Bethany, the town of Mary and her sister Martha. It was that Mary which anointed the Lord with ointment and wiped his feet with her hair, whose brother Lazarus was sick. Therefore his sister sent unto him, saying, Lord, behold, he whom thou lovest is sick. When Jesus heard that, he said, The sickness is not unto death, but for the glory of God, that the Son of God might be glorified thereby. Now, Jesus loved Martha and her sister and Lazarus. And when he had heard therefore that he was sick, he abode 2 days still in the same place where he was. Then after that saith he to his disciples, Let us go into Judea again. His disciples say unto him, Master, the Jews of late sought to stone thee, and goest thou thither again? Jesus answered, Are there not 12 hours in the day? If any man walk in the day, he stumbleth not, because he seeth the light of this world. But if a man walk in the night, he stumbleth, because there is no light in him. These things said he, and after that he saith unto them, Our friend Lazarus sleepeth, but I go that I may awake him out of sleep. Then said his disciples, Lord, if he sleep, he do well. Howbeit, Jesus spake of his death, but they thought that he had spoken of taking of rest in sleep. Then said Jesus unto them plainly, Lazarus is dead. And I am glad for your sakes that I was not there, to the intent that ye may believe. Nevertheless, let us go unto him. Then said Thomas, which is called Didymus, unto his fellow disciples, Let us go, that we may die with him. Then, when Jesus came, he found that he had lain in the grave 4 days already. Now Bethany was nigh unto Jerusalem, about 15 furlongs off. And many of the Jews came to Martha and to Mary to comfort them concerning their brother. Then Martha, as soon as she heard that Jesus was coming, went and met him. But Mary sat still in the house. Then said Martha unto Jesus, Lord, if thou hadst been here, my brother had not died. But now I know that even now, whatsoever thou wilt ask of God, God will give it thee. Jesus saith unto her, Thy brother shall rise again. Martha saith unto him, I know that he shall rise in the resurrection at the last day. Jesus said unto her, I am the resurrection and the life. He that believeth in me, though he were dead, yet shall he live. And whosoever believeth, yet shall he live, and whosoever liveth and believeth in him shall never die. Believest thou this? She saith unto him, Yea, Lord, I believe that thou art the Christ, the Son of God, which should come into the world. And when she had said so, she went her way and called Mary her sister secretly, saying, The Master is come and calleth for thee. As soon as she heard that, she rose quickly and came unto him. Now Jesus was not yet come into the town, but was in that place where Martha met him. The Jews then, which were with her in the house, and comforted her when they saw Mary, that she rose up hastily, went out, and followed her, saying, She goeth unto the grave to weep there. Then, when Mary was come where Jesus was, and saw him, she fell down at his feet, saying unto him, Lord, if thou hadst been here, my brother had not died. When Jesus therefore saw her weeping, and the Jews also which came with her, he groaned in the spirit, and was troubled, and said, Where have ye laid him? And they said unto him, Lord, come and see. Jesus wept. Then said the Jews, Behold, how he loved him. And some of them said, Could not this man which opened the eyes of the blind have caused that even this man should not have died? Jesus therefore again groaning in himself cometh to the grave. It was a cave, and a stone lay upon it. And Jesus said, Take ye away the stone. Martha, the sister of him that was dead, saith unto him, Lord, by this time he stinketh, for he hath been dead 4 days. Jesus saith unto her, Said I not unto thee that if thou shouldest believe, thou shouldest see the glory of God? Then they took away the stone from the place where the dead was laid. And Jesus lifted up his eyes and said, Father, I thank thee that thou hast heard me. And I knew that thou hearest me always. But because of the people which stand by, I said it, that they may believe that thou hast sent me. And when he had thus spoken, he cried with a loud voice, Lazarus, come forth. And he that was dead came forth, bound hand and foot with grave clothes, and his face was bound about with a napkin. Jesus saith unto them, Loose him and let him go. I'm going to cease reading there. I want to notice a couple things about this passage. First of all, who were these people? Who was Mary, Martha, and Lazarus? They were a place that I gather must have been, I have the picture in my mind at least of maybe some older singles that lived together. Brothers, a brother and sisters that lived together. Just gives me that impression from what I read here. And it is the same group of people that invited Jesus at one time, and Mary was cumbered about much serving. She was busy with the kitchen duties, getting ready for company, and that her sister Mary was sitting at Jesus' feet. She was sitting there listening to his teaching. And then Martha thought it time for Mary to get up from her position and listen to her and her things out in the kitchen and get this ready and put that there and do this and do that and get ready for this meal. She was cumbered with much serving. But Jesus said that Mary chose that good part which would not be taken away from her. Jesus said there, one thing is needful, and that can be a sermon in itself, but that's not our theme this morning. And then if you flip the pages of your Bible to John chapter 12, you see another story. And that story is a story about the very same people, evidently occurring just slightly after the one we're reading in John 11. 6 days before the Passover, this is within the last week of Jesus' life, or say during the last week of Jesus' life, 6 days before the Passover, he comes to Bethany. And that's where Lazarus had been dead, who he raised from the dead. So we know it's history by this point, the fact that Lazarus came to life. And they had a supper there, and Martha served again. She must have been a good cook and liked to serve people at her table. But Lazarus was one of them that sat at the table with him. And then we see what Mary did. It specifies clearly in verses, in the first verses here, in verse 2, it says, That Mary, speaking of this sister to Martha and Lazarus, this sister, Mary, was the one that anointed Jesus' feet and wiped him with her hair. And then it talks about that here. And it talks about the discrepancy and the challenge that Judas, at least, was pretty upset about this. He said, well, why shouldn't this ointment have been sold and given to the, that this all this money would have been used for the poor rather than dumping it out on Jesus' feet? And that story is given there in John chapter 12. Jesus taught him a few lessons around that occasion. Nothing is wasted that is spent on Christ and on his cause. Nothing is wasted. That's a sideline. Getting back to the story here. So Lazarus is sick at this point, and his sister's concerned about it, and knowing Jesus' healing power and ability, they at least send somebody to tell Jesus that Lazarus is sick. The one whom you love is sick. The one whom you've been at our house, you know us well. And we don't know all the times that Jesus may have been there, but they sent this word to Christ. And then Jesus, when he hears it, he says something. He says, this sickness is not unto death, but for the glory of God. The sickness is not unto death, but for the glory of God. That the Son of God might be glorified thereby. And if there's any title that I would put to this sermon this morning, it would be that God may be glorified. If there's anything that comes to our minds today and anything activity that we're involved with throughout this coming week, may the goal and the ultimate always be that God be glorified. Not us, but God be glorified. That God may be glorified. And Jesus says this sickness is a sickness that is come about so that God may be glorified. And sometimes when we're in the heart of the matter and in the heat of the day, in the heat of the battle, we wonder how in the world God can get glory out of this. But that's what Jesus said was the reason here. And Jesus was totally human, but totally divine. I've said that before. Totally human, but totally divine. And somehow in this moment, and especially as we get toward the end of the book of John, we see more of that divinity shining out. Just beyond the miracle working power, but we see the thought processes behind the acts of Christ and the things that he did. The book of Matthew teaches us what Jesus taught. The book of Mark teaches us what Jesus wrought, his doings. He was busy like the vision of the ox, going from thing to thing, laboring, laboring, laboring. In the book of Luke, we see what Jesus sought. In the book of John, we see what Jesus thought. And here we see that. Jesus just lets it known right here. This sickness is so that people might know. It's for the glory of God that the Son of Man might be glorified thereby. And if we could live our lives in that light, it would be a wonderful thing. Now, Jesus loved these people. He was concerned about them. He loved them very much. And yet he stayed where he was for 2 more days. And we don't know exactly how far it was from where he was to where they were. But it seems like it could have been somewhat of a journey. But he stayed where he was for 2 more days. We want to pull some lessons from this later on, but Jesus is always on time with his plan. It's not on time with our plan many times, but it is on time with his plan. Jesus knew full well what was going on over there in that little town, in that little home. He knew all about it, where he was. And then he says to the disciples, let us go to Judea again. And Jesus, knowing in his divinity what's happening over there, he begins his journey. And the disciples are shook up because Jesus had already told them in clear terms that when he gets to Jerusalem, it's not going to be a good day there for him. He had made that clear to them earlier. And Peter tried to derail him from that purpose. And the disciples here in moderate terms said, hey, of late you know that Jesus wanted to stone you, and why would you go again? But Jesus was on a time clock. Jesus was coming down to the final days of his life. He knew that. He knew it. And Jesus just makes a couple comments. Aren't there 12 hours in a day? Well, yeah. 6 in the morning till 6 in the evening, which was basically the Jewish daylight time. Isn't that 12 hours? Yeah. If you walk in the day and don't stumble. He just gives a couple sidelines there. It looks like he's kind of taking him down another train of thought. And then he says, you know what? Her friend Lazarus sleepeth. The one who has served us meals and probably been the provider for his sisters, he's sleeping. But I go that I may wake him out of sleep. And the disciple says, Lord, well, you and I both know that when a child is sleeping when they're sick, it does them well. If you and you're sick are able to sleep, it does you well. There's something about sleeping that continues to heal us. And that's all the disciples were thinking about. But Jesus says he's going to wake him from sleep. He had that purpose in mind ahead of time. It wasn't a happenstance. Howbeit, Jesus spake of his death, but they just thought he was thinking about rest. And then Jesus said plainly, you know what? Lazarus is dead. But Jesus says, I'm glad for your sakes. I'm glad for your sakes. And why? To the intent that ye may believe. Nevertheless, let us go unto him. So, and Thomas didn't quite understand the whole thing, but they're walking, they're on this journey, they're heading there. Jesus said it so that they might believe. Jesus told them this ahead of time so that they might believe. And we're going to soon see some more of what all Jesus had in mind. When he gets there, he discovered that he had been in the grave 4 days. And it seemed like they must have been a distance off because it took them a while to get there. I've said that before. And we see something here of the culture of this time and people. And this is something that I don't see as much around here. Even in Latin America, you see this a lot more. Some of it's because of the Catholic religion, and some of that I might just take a moment to explain. But in this time, a death was some major event. At this time yet, they did not know what was going to happen the first day of the week when a stone would be rolled away. They did not know what it would be like that the first fruits of them that slept would come forth in newness of life. They had not seen that yet. So for them, a death was a superly final thing. Although they would have had some vague recollection and some vague knowledge, and it comes up later in this chapter whenever that dialogue goes on between Jesus and Martha. They had some understanding, like the patriarch Job had, that I know that my Redeemer liveth, and that he shall stand to the last day upon the earth, and though skin worms destroy this body, yet in my flesh shall I see God. He says that. And there's other little glimpses of hope throughout the scriptures and in the Psalms. David himself says that the Holy One would not see corruption. And he also says that, gives different other thoughts and ideas that give to understand the reality of life beyond this life. But whenever it happened, to these people it was a finality. There was really nothing beyond that. And that's where they were focused. And so they bring, many people would come together to comfort and to mourn with these people. In Latin America, it happens a little different. I remember the afternoon that a neighbor man of mine, it was a very interesting thing because about 6 months before, I was on a trip to Nicaragua and I needed someone to milk my cows. And he was there and he helped milk our cows. He did a good job. And about one afternoon, I got the sudden news that Albano had collapsed on his roof. He was up fixing his roof, painting his roof or something, and he died up there on the roof. And kind of a shocking thing. A man who had attended some of our services in earlier times. When I got there to the house that evening and discovered that his own son and my next door neighbor man helped to get him down off of the roof. Can you imagine such a job? Would you enjoy that? Getting a unlive man off of a roof, and brought him down. I had him in a box there, and I tell you, the crowd of people that was around there, and some of those devout ladies up there around that casket going through that rosary, making their prayers, doing their thing. They're really concerned about it when somebody dies. And do you realize that every night for the following week after a person like that dies, groups of people come together to say those prayers and to be with the family and to bring them food and stuff, to kind of show their support. They're there every night for an entire week. And usually at the end of that week, they have a small fiesta, because by that time, if they had gotten any major sins, they got them taken care of. By that time, about 7 days through purgatory, they about got them made to get into glory. St. Peter will let them in. That's the way it is in those kind of cultures. And if you see that, you see a little bit what happens here. The people just get together and they're staying there and they spend time there and days there. That's what happened. This was a different culture than what we live in today. We understand. I'm just giving a little Latin American perspective on some of this because I've seen some of that. But Martha finds out that Jesus is here. He's getting close, and she goes out to meet him. We're going to just look at this dialogue just a little bit. But Mary, for some reason, stayed still at the house. She was more contemplative. She might not have heard. She might not have felt very inspired at this moment to go. And then Martha starts right in. Lord, if thou hadst been here, my brother had not died. She goes right there. She just wants to get this said. Jesus, you didn't come when we called you. Why didn't you? But she says something else, an aspect of faith. But I know that even now, whatsoever thou wilt ask of God, God will give it thee. Jesus saith unto her, thy brother shall rise again. She expresses her faith in spite of her disappointment. She expresses her faith. And Jesus says, your brother's going to rise again. And she says, I know that he shall rise again in the resurrection at the last day. I know that. She mentions that. Jesus said unto her, I am the resurrection and the life. He that believeth on me, though he were dead, yet shall he live. And whosoever liveth and believeth in me shall never die. Believest thou this? You know, we can have these concepts. We can have these theories. But Jesus looked at Martha straight in the face from what I can see here and says, believest thou that I am the resurrection and the life? And she saith unto him, yea, Lord, I believe. Yes, Lord, I believe. That thou art the Christ, that thou art the Messiah, thou art the anointed one. I believe that thou art the Son of God, which should come into the world. She expressed a personal faith in Christ when Jesus challenged her, believest thou this? And then we go on, we see how Jesus continues. And she went back to her house and called Mary, her sister, secretly, saying, the Master is come and calleth for thee. That's an evangelistic title. The Master is come and calleth for thee. When the resurrection and the life is standing out there somewhere on the road and sends and calls for somebody, are you going to stay sitting there, moping around, crying? Is that what's going to happen? As soon as she heard that, she rose quickly and came unto him. And it says that Jesus was not yet at the place, but he was out there yet where Martha met him. Martha had gone a ways out there to meet Jesus. Mary went to the same place to meet Jesus. Jesus didn't move. Jesus was not in a hurry. He was not under pressure. The Jews then, which were with her in the house and comforted her, when they saw Mary, they rose up hastily and went out and followed her, saying, she goeth to the grave to weep there. This whole group of people, they see Mary leaving. And I don't know what Martha did right in this little interim of time, but I have a feeling she kind of went right along out with them again. This whole group of people that were there to support, they were there to help, they were there to do whatever they could to carry the load and bear the pain. They went all out to meet Jesus. Then when Mary was come where Jesus was and saw him, she fell down at his feet, saying unto him, Lord, if thou hadst been here, my brother had not died. Who just said those words a couple verses earlier? Martha did. The exact same words. Lord, if you only would have been here, my brother had not died. When Jesus therefore saw her weeping, and the Jews also weeping which came with her, he groaned in the spirit and was troubled. This whole scene before him touched his heart. He groaned in spirit. There's probably a couple reasons why he groaned. And we're going to see some of that hopefully in a future sermon, why Jesus was so burdened at this moment. And he says, where have you laid him? And they said, Lord, come and see. This to them was very special. The burial of their brother was very special. The Jews that were there at this time, it was a very touching thing. Jesus asked, where's he at? And they said, Lord, come and see. Is Jesus allowed to look at the problem that you have this morning? Would you just say, Jesus, this problem's too big for me. Come and see it. Look at it. Is there a burden that you're carrying this morning? Would you just say, Jesus, come and see? And as Jesus makes his way with this group, and Mary and Martha, I'm sure, very close to him, and heads in that direction, wherever it is, Jesus wept. And people saw that he wept. And someone has made the comment that no one has ever seen Jesus laugh, but many have seen him weep. Many have seen him weep. And why did he weep? That's a good question to consider. Then said the Jews, behold how he loved him. Notice how Jesus loved this man. Notice how Jesus loves these people. Notice it. And then they had this question. Could not this man which opened the eyes of the blind have caused that even this man should not have died? They're asking this question. This is the group I take from it. It's not so much Mary and Martha now. And what did Jesus have as a response to that in 38? Jesus therefore again groaning in himself cometh to the grave. And why did Jesus groan? What was so impressive to Jesus about this? What happened when Jesus healed a person on the Sabbath day? They'd criticize it and cut it to pieces and make it all kind of look bad because he didn't observe the Sabbath. Whenever some daughter of Abraham was raised up and helped, and Jesus could not understand this, I believe. These people that in the moment now of death, they hoped that he would do something. And they said he could open the eyes of the blind. And what happened to the man in John 9? We just had that a few weeks ago. The man in John 9, when Jesus healed him, the one who had been born blind, they criticized it. They belittled him. And they eventually put that blind man that was made well, they put him out of the synagogue because he confessed Christ. And here these very same people are wishing that Jesus would suddenly do a miracle. And Jesus knew that some of these very people are the ones who would be not very long from now crying, crucify him, crucify him. And I'm sure Jesus in his divinity knew the whole thing from then already. He knew it from then. And he just groaned in his spirit. But it still wasn't crucifixion day. It still was not time for that to occur, and Jesus still has work to do. And although he groaned in his spirit, he comes to the grave and says, take away the stone. And I just want to remind us this morning, if we take Jesus to a situation in our lives that looks out of control, God is in control. When Jesus tells these people, he's been in the grave 4 days, but take the stone away. Who's the boss? Who's in charge? Jesus is. And for some reason, although these people, in one day he was their friend, and one day he was their enemy, just according to the way it suited their religious fantasy or fancy, whenever Jesus spoke, things happened. They took away the stone. They didn't want to because they were afraid of some smells. Jesus said unto her in verse 40, said I not unto thee that if thou wouldest believe, thou shouldest see the glory of God? You know what? That's what Jesus is all about. I do always those things which please the Father, he said in another place. I always do the things that please the Father. I'm here to glorify the God of heaven. Is that what you're all about? Are you here to glorify God? If you and I believe, we can see the glory of God. They took away the stone from the place where it was laid. And Jesus lifted up his eyes and said, Father, I thank thee that thou hast heard me. Notice the words Jesus used. I thank thee that thou hast heard me. Amazing. A thought like that. Jesus knew that God heard him. It's almost as if it already happened. And I knew that thou hearest me always. But because of the people which stand by, I said it, that they may believe that thou hast sent me. And you know what? There's a lot of Jews that still have not believed in Jesus. There's a lot of people out there that had the religion and still have it, but don't believe in Jesus. But he said this, that those who were there would believe. And when he had thus spoken, he cried with a loud voice, Lazarus, come forth! And he that was dead came forth, bound hand and foot with grave clothes, and his face was bound about with a napkin. He was all wound up, and his face was covered from what we see here. He must have looked like a walking mannequin coming out of there, a walking mummy of some kind. Jesus saith unto them, Loose him and let him go. So what can you and I learn from this passage this morning? Number one, Jesus wants to be a personal friend to you and I. Jesus wants to be a personal friend to you and I. The song that's in our songbooks there, Does Jesus Care? That song's special to me because one night, Shepherd's Fold came to our house when we were going through a real tough time. And they mentioned that song, started to sing, and I couldn't sing that song that evening. I believed it with all my heart, and I still do. But the tears were running too fast to sing much of it. Most amazing thing was there was a brother in the fold that at that point in time that was facing something extremely tough. And he sat there and he couldn't sing either. His family far from here. And he was touched with that song. But that one phrase in that song that again and again touches my heart is that his heart is touched with my grief. And if you look through this story, you see that shining out again and again. Jesus is a personal friend to us, and his heart is touched with our grief. Another lesson I want to take from this passage this morning is that God is not in a hurry. God is not in a hurry. There's a song in our songbooks also that says, Our lives through various scenes are drawn, and vexed with trifling care, while thy eternal thought moves on thy undisturbed affairs. No one is rocking God's plans and turning them upside down. Nobody. Man has a lot of things that he thinks he's got under control. But God's not in a hurry. His affairs move on in a very stately manner. One day to another. One month to another. One year to another. One decade to another. One millennium to another. His thoughts move on. His undisturbed affairs. It just goes on and goes on. And we're in the middle of trifling scenes and vexed with this and that. And don't know how to do this and don't know how to do that sometimes. And we find ourselves, like people say, without a clue what to do next sometimes. And yet God is not in a hurry. You see that in this story. By the time Jesus got there, how many days was he dead? 4 days already. Already dead, 4 days. Right along with that, number three, little thought for you and I this morning, is God is in control. When Jesus gets to the side of that grave, the people obviously were mourning this loss. They were very sad about it. But as Jesus says, roll that stone back, he's in control. God is in control. We believe that his children will not be forsaken. God is in control. We will trust in his promise. We'll never be shaken. There is no power above or beside you. We know that God is in control. Do you believe that this morning? I trust that you do. Because if you do, you can see the salvation of God. If you believe, all things are possible to him that believeth. What a blessing. God is in control. And we can have that confidence this morning. And it can be your portion and mine. God is in control. Because of that, number four, we are always very dependent on God. Another song that we sing sometimes is, I'm depending on Jesus each hour of the day. And that song goes on to enumerate things in which we need to depend on Jesus. We need to depend on him. Without him, we can do nothing. Without him, we are nothing. We need to depend on him. Because he's got it under control. And he's not in a hurry. And his timetable does not say the same thing that ours does. He's a personal friend. We can depend on him. I am depending on Jesus. He's depending on me. Number five, we need to each have a personal belief that Jesus is the resurrection and the life. It's one thing if your parents taught you that. It's one thing if a preacher tells you that. It's one thing if somebody you love tells you that. But it is important this morning, if you're at the age of accountability and above, that you know personally that Jesus Christ is the resurrection and the life. You need to know that. Because Jesus looked at Martha there and said, believest thou this? 500 other people can believe it, or 50,000 people more can believe it, but it needs to be personal with us to do us any good at all. Let's remember, number six, that for the Christian, there is hope beyond the grave. Because the Christian believes in Christ, there's hope beyond the grave. And yet, that being the case, the Bible still tells us to rejoice with them that do rejoice and weep with them that weep. It still tells us that. Weep with them that weep. Number seven. Said I not unto thee that if thou wouldest believe, thou shouldest see the glory of God? Why did this whole thing happen? What was the motive behind it all? What was there? When Jesus heard that, says back at the beginning of the chapter, this sickness is not unto death, but for the glory of God, that the Son of God might be glorified thereby. So if you're in a courtship this morning, that the Son of God may be glorified thereby. If you're starting a new job, that the Son of God may be glorified thereby. If you're making a new dress, that the Son of God may be glorified thereby. If you're ready to buy yourself a pickup truck, that the Son of God may be glorified thereby. If you're planning to go out and spend some money, that the glory of God would shine forth, that the Son of God may be glorified thereby. It needs to be made practical, brethren and sisters, in my life and yours this morning. Because if we believe, we shall see the glory of God. And we can see God's glory in day-by-day events and little things that happen and occur and throughout our day-by-day life. But we all If we believe that Jesus Christ is the resurrection and the life, we're going to see more glory of God yet one day. And we anticipate that. So that's my closing challenge. That if you would believe, thou shouldest see the glory of God. And what do you think heaven's all about anyway? It's glory of God. And the unfolding of his eternal plan. When we get out of this parenthesis of time and sense and move into the beyond, we see more of the glory of God. And that is the anticipation that keeps the Christian motivated to live another day and to testify for Christ and to be a living testimony for the Lord Jesus. May God help us to this end.